हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. This is chapter 11, Eternal Religion and Bhut Parasta, or Deity Worship. Nitya Dharma of Bhut Parasta, Artat Pau Talikata. On the Ganges' western shore is the village of Paharapura. That famous village is in the middle of Kaladweep, which is within Navadweep. At the time of Sriman Mahaprabhu, an especially respectable and influential man named Sri Madhavadas Chattopadhyay, also known as Chakari Chattopadhyay. Chakari had a son named Srila Vamsivarana Thakur. By Lord Mahaprabhu's mercy, Sri Vamsivarana became very great and powerful. Thinking him an incarnation of Lord Krishna's flute, everyone called him Prabhu Vamsivarana. It was well known that Mother Vishnupriya was especially merciful to Prabhu Vamsivarana. After Mother Vishnupriya disappeared, Vamsivarana moved the deity form of the Lord from Sri Mayapur to Kulia Paharapura. Oh, okay. When his descendants attained the mercy of Mother Sri Janavi and moved to Sripat Bhagnapara, the worship of the deity of Lord Mahaprabhu was continued by the pujaris living in Malancha and Kuliagram. The village of Kuliagram was situated across the Ganga from the old city of Navadvip. In the area of Kulia were some famous small hamlets, such as one named Chidangar. A devotee merchant, Chinadanga. A devotee merchant of Chinadanga once held a great spiritual festival in the temple at Kulia, Paharapura. Many Brahmana pundits and all the Vaishnavas within 32 miles of Navadvip were invited to that festival. On the day of the festival, the Vaishnavas were coming from all directions. Sri Anantadas and others came from Sri Narsingapali. Sri Gaurachandra Babaji and others came from Sri Mayapur. Sri Narayan Das Babaji and others came from Bilva Pushkarini. Sri Narahari Das and others came from Sri Modadruma. The Paramahamsa Babaji, Vaishnav Das and others came from Sri Godruma. Sri Sachinandan Das and others came from Sri Samudragar. The Tilak mark of Lord Hari's temple was on their foreheads. Tulsi beads were around their necks, and all their limbs were resplendent with the marks of Lord Gaura and Lord Nityananda. On every hand were beads for chanting the holy names of Lord Hari. Everyone loudly chanted, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That was the mantra they sang. Some played the kartals and sang, Glorious Lord Gaura dances in the Sankirtan. Again and again, some danced and sang, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivasri Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Many tears fell from many eyes. Some limbs had hairs standing erect in ecstasy. Some fervently called out, "Oh, Gaura Kishore, will your eternal pastimes ever be seen by our eyes?" Some Vaishnavas played mridangas and repeatedly sang the holy names as they walked. The women from Kulia, who were devotees of Lord Gaura, became filled with wonder to see the ecstatic love the Vaishnavas showed. Walking and walking, the Vaishnavas finally came to the temple, which was now a theater where there would be a play about Sriman Mahaprabhu. A cloth around his neck, the host merchant fell at the Vaishnavas' feet and spoke many humble words. It's considered a sign of humility. At least in Bengal, they wear the cloth around their neck like this. You see? Like in South, they'll put it around their waist, but in Bengal, they'll put it around their neck. Then the Vaishnavas took their seats within the theater. The pujaris came and placed prasadam flower garlands around the Vaishnavas' necks. Then the play Sri Chaitanya Mangal began. As they heard the nectarine pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, the Vaishnavas manifested different kinds of Satvika Bhava ecstasies. as everyone was thus plunged in an ocean of transcendental bliss. One of the gatekeepers approached the temple authorities and said that the head mullah of Satsahaika Paragana had come, was now seated in the courtyard with his associates, and wanted to talk with a Vaishnava pandit. The temple's authorities informed the assembled Babaji pandits. The nectar of the play was thus interrupted. The Vaishnavas became unhappy. Sri Krishnas Babaji, of Madhyadweep, asked, "What is the mullah's intention?" Aware of the mullah's intention, one of the temple authorities said, "The mullah wishes to talk with the Vaishnavas about the spiritual truth." He also said that the mullah had no rival amongst the Mohammedan scholars. He was very earnest about preaching his own religion everywhere, and he was not a fanatic who hated other religions. Also, the emperor at Delhi greatly respected him. The mullah also asked that only one or two Vaishnava pundits engage in a conversation about scripture. He thought in that way the pure Vaishnava religion would be defeated. Hearing that an opportunity to preach the Vaishnava religion had now come, the desire to talk with this mullah arose in the hearts of some of the Vaishnavas. Talking amongst themselves, they decided that Gorachand Das Pandit Babaji of Sri Mayapur, Sri Vaishnava Das Pandit Babaji of Sri Godrum, Prem Das Babaji of Janu Nagar, and Kali Pavana Das Babaji of Champahata would go and talk with the mullah, and then the play Sri Chaitanya Mangal ended. And when the play Sri Chaitanya Mangal ended, everyone else would come and join them. Calling out Jai Nityananda, the four Babajis followed the Mahanta to the outer courtyard. The outer courtyard was very pleasant. It was cool with the shade of a banyan tree. Seeing the Vaishnavas coming, the mullah and his associates greeted them respectfully, fully aware that all souls are servants of Lord Krishna. The Vaishnavas offered dandavat obeisances to Lord Vasudeva, residing in the hearts of the mullahs. Then the Vaishnavas took their seats. It was a very beautiful sight. On one side were 50 white-bearded Mohammedan scholars, nicely dressed and decorated. Behind them, some decorated horses were tethered. On the other side were four humble and effulgent Vaishnavas. Behind them were many Hindus who had come and taken their seats out of curiosity. The Pandit Gorachandra spoke first. "O noble ones, for what purpose have you remembered us poor people?" The saintly mullah Badaruddin Sahib humbly replied, "Salam. Please accept our respects. We have come to ask some questions." The learned Gorachandra replied, "As far as I am able, I shall answer your learned questions." Badaruddin Sahib stepped forward and said, "Brothers, in Hindu society, the worship of demigods and demigoddesses has existed for many days. In our holy Quran, I see that Allah is one, not two. He has no form. To make an image of him and to worship it is a great offense. I asked many Brahmana pundits about this, and they said that although Allah is indeed formless, the mind cannot meditate on a formless thing, and therefore one should create an imaginary form of Allah, and that form should receive our worship and meditation. I am not able to accept these words very happily." "Why not?" "To create an imaginary form like that is the word of Satan. We call that Bhut, to worship. Bhut is completely forbidden. By that worship, one is pushed far away from pleasing Allah, and one becomes worthy of punishment by him. We have heard that your first preacher, Chaitanya Dev, took all the faults of the Hindu religion. Still, he was in favor of this Bhut worship, or worship of a material thing. What we want to know from the Vaishnavas is, why, after consulting the scriptures, have you not rejected this Bhut worship?" Hearing this question from the mullah, the Vaishnava pundits smiled within their minds. Openly they said, "This saintly pundit Babaji will give the answer to you." Replying with, "As you order," the pundit Gorachandra said, "He whom you call Allah, we call Bhagavan." Both these words refer to the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is called by different names in the Quran, the Puranas, and different countries and language, and in different countries and languages. The name that best expresses all the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be accepted. That is why we favor the name Bhagavan over Allah, Brahman, Paramatma, and all other names. The word Allah means he who has no superior. We do not call superiority the best of the Lord's qualities. We say that wonderfulness is the best of his qualities. To be very big is certainly very wonderful. However, the opposite to be very small is also very wonderful. Therefore, the name Allah does not reach to the highest limit of the Lord's wonderful qualities. The word Bhagavan, however, refers to all wonderful qualities within qualities human beings can know. It puts them all in one word. The ultimate of greatness and the ultimate of smallness are only one feature of Bhagavan. That he is the master of all potencies is a second feature of Bhagavan. Whatever a human being thinks is impossible, his inconceivable potency can easily accomplish. It is by the power of his inconceivable potency that he both has a form and does not have a form. If we say that he does not have a form, then we deny his inconceivable potency. By his inconceivable potency, he has a form and he enjoys pastimes with his devotees eternally. Allah, Brahman, and Paramatma are formless. Therefore, they do not have these wonderful features. Bhagavan is all auspicious and all famous. His pastimes are sweet like nectar. Bhagavan is sublimely handsome. With spiritual eyes, the liberated souls gaze on his handsomeness. Bhagavan has all knowledge. He is pure and perfect. He is beyond the touch of matter. His form is spiritual. He is beyond the material elements or bhut. Although he is the creator of the material world, Bhagavan is untouched by matter. He is independent. The word Bhagavan means he who has six opulences. Bhagavan has two features. One, opulence, and two, sweetness. The feature of sweetness is the best friend of the spirit soul. He is the Lord of our hearts. He is Krishna or Chaitanya. Therefore, if someone says that the word of an imaginary form of Bhagavan is bhut worship, a worship of matter, that is not in opposition to our philosophy. The Vaishnava religion teaches that one should worship the Lord's eternal form, which is perfectly spiritual. According to this Vaishnava philosophy, this kind of worship of the Lord's form is not bhut worship. If any book it is said that this kind of worship is bhut worship and is forbidden, then that book has no authority to forbid it. Everything depends on the faith within the heart. A person whose heart is free from bhut, who is beyond the material world, can worship the pure spiritual form of the Lord. You are Mulla Sahib. You are a great pundit. Your heart is certainly free from the touch of matter. But are the hearts of your neophyte disciples free from the thought of bhut? To whatever extent a man is filled with the thoughts of bhut, to that extent his worship of God is really worship of bhut. With his mouth he says God is formless, and his mind is filled with thoughts of bhut. The people in general find it very hard to worship the pure form of the Lord. Only a person who is specially qualified, who is beyond the touch of matter, can rise above thinking of bhut. I request that you consider these points. So he's pointing out the difference between approaching God as the Supreme and approaching God as the most wonderful person. So the qualities of the Lord, the greatness of the Lord, then that is generally what we see as appreciated. God is the biggest in this world. Whoever's bigger than us, then we respect them. Maybe happily, maybe not happily, but we respect them because they're bigger than us, more powerful. So then God's the end of the line of that particular development. He's the most senior. But as is pointed out, just being great is wonderful, but also being small is also, the smallest is also wonderful. So God has so many qualities. So these qualities that are, these ones that mention him as supreme, don't really mention the limit of his, they don't come to the topmost platform of his good qualities. So his wonderfulness, that is more important to the Vaishnavas. So then he's pointing out here is that therefore he has a spiritual form, because to say he doesn't mean then we don't say he's inconceivable, right? Because then it's a matter of what we can conceive only then we are acknowledging. And what we don't, then we say it doesn't exist. But then that's ignoring that God is inconceivable. Otherwise, then if we can conceive of him fully, then how is he so great? Because we can't even understand one person to the next fully, so let alone understand God. So, therefore, someone who is free from material contamination, he can understand the nature of the Lord. So here, then, those who are advanced, they can understand, they can worship the Lord in his pure spiritual form. And those who are not, whose heart is full of materialness, then their worship of the Lord will also be material. So we also agree that an imagined form of the Lord is not authorized to be worshipped. Only the proper transcendental form of the Lord, that can be worshipped. But that needs to be worshipped by one who is free from this material qualities, who is above that, who is not interested in matter. To that degree, he makes a point, to that degree that we are interested or absorbed in matter, to that degree our worship of the Lord will also be material. It will be tinged with karma and jnana. So as we put less value in the material world, then our worship of the Lord will have more value. It will be deeper like that. So he's saying here to the mullah, basically pointing out that he is, you know, advanced and pure, so he could understand this, but maybe his followers may or may not be able to understand. So, but he should consider this. He should consider. Therefore, that's why then the formless form of the Lord is given, for those who are so materialistic they can't conceive of anything spiritual. Because there has to be some purity to understand it. Any questions on that? Or? If not, we'll go on. Mula, I have considered these points, and I think that the six wonderful qualities of Bhagavan you have described are also ascribed to Allah in the Holy Quran. There's no new need to debate the etymology of the word. Etymology of the word Allah is Bhagavan. Gaurachandra, good. Then you accept that the Supreme Being has opulence and handsomeness. Then it is accepted that he has a handsome form in the spiritual world, which is a place different from the material world. That form of the Lord is the deity we worship. Mula. In our Quran, it means that he accepts that he is all opulence and all that, so beauty is also one. So beauty then means naturally there's a form. Right? Beauty we ascribe to form. You know, that's its normal... No, it's always a form like that. Sometimes even we may eat something and we say it's very beautiful, or, you know, some music is beautiful, but there's some form to it. So the form goes with the beauty. Mula, in our Quran, it is also written that the Supreme has a spiritual form that is greater than the greatest. We accept that. However, when you make a statue of that spiritual form, that statue is material. Therefore, I say that is beauty. Worship of Butte is not the same as worship of He who is greater than the greatest. Please say what you think of this. So he's saying that it's written that it has a spiritual form. But therefore, any depicting of that here, then that is a mistake. So actually, in his understanding, that then the Lord does have a spiritual form, but they just don't agree to manifesting that form here. They don't know the science of deity worship. So then those who say that he has no form, then they're talking about here, he has no material form. But they generally don't know it. And most are actually impersonalists. Gaurachandra, in the Vaishnava scriptures it is said that one should worship the pure and spiritual deity form of the Lord. Exalted devotees would not worship the deity form of the Lord if that form were made of earth or any other material element. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.48.13, it is said, a human being who identifies the body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of his body to be kinsmen, who considers the deity form of the Lord to be made of earth or other material elements, who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than to meet people of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered as an ass or a cow. In Bhagavad Gita 9.25 it is said, "They who worship matter remain in the material world." Therefore the conclusion of the scriptures is that worship of matter is not allowed. That you can see. However, a certain point should be explained. Human beings are situated on different levels of knowledge and purity. A person situated in pure spiritual knowledge is able to worship the pure spiritual form of the Lord. Persons situated on lower levels of spiritual awareness understand the Lord to a lesser degree, and they who are on the lowest level cannot understand the Lord's spiritual nature at all. When he meditates on God, a person on the lowest level inevitably imagines that God has a material form of material qualities. To think that the deity form of the Lord is a statue made of clay is the same as to meditate in the mind on a supreme that one imagines to have a form made of matter. Actually, for persons on that level of advancement, worship of the deity form of the Lord is very beneficial. In fact, if there were no deity worship, the people in general would be in an inauspicious condition. An ordinary person eager to see God were not able to see the deity form of the Lord, then he would lose hope that he would ever see the Lord. The followers of religions that forbid deity worship are on a low level of spiritual advancement. They are materialistic and not interested in worshiping the Lord. Therefore, the deity worship is the foundation of religion. Pure and wise saints gaze on the form of the Supreme Lord. Their hearts purified by devotion. They know that the deity form of the Lord is pure spirit. As the heart becomes more and more purified by devotion, the worshipper gradually comes to understand that the deity form of the Lord is a spiritual form reflected within the realm of the material world. Thus the deity form is the spiritual form of the Lord, a form that the great saints have arranged to be reflected within the material world. An advanced devotee can directly perceive that the deity form is perfectly spiritual. An intermediate devotee thinks that the deity form is a mental image. At first, a neophyte devotee thinks the deity is a statue made of material elements. But as he gradually becomes pure in heart, he also gradually comes to understand that the deity is actually made of spirit. Therefore, the deity form of the Lord should be worshipped by all classes of devotees. To worship an imaginary form is forbidden. However, to worship the real eternal form of the Lord is very auspicious. Therefore, the worship of the deity form of the Lord is established for all three classes of Vaishnavas. There is nothing wrong in it. On the contrary, it brings the greatest auspiciousness. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.14.26, the Supreme Lord Himself declares, "When a person purifies his heart by hearing and singing pure songs, describing me, he gradually becomes able to see spirit. He becomes like a person whose eyesight is restored by medicinal ointment." In the material world, the mind tends to be filled with material thoughts. In that condition, the soul is not able to understand his true spiritual identity, and he is also not able to serve the Supreme Lord, who resides in his heart as the Super Soul. By hearing and chanting the Lord's glories and by performing other kinds of devotional service, the soul gradually becomes powerful. Then the bonds of matter that hold him become slackened. As the bondage of matter becomes slackened, the soul becomes stronger, and in the course of time, the soul becomes exalted. He can directly see spirit, and he can act on the spiritual platform. Some say that some say that one should keep far away all that has no relationship to the Lord, and one should act only to attain Him. However, one cannot become spiritually strong merely by dry knowledge. How can a conditioned soul get the power to suddenly renounce all that has no direct relationship to the Lord? Can a prisoner in jail release himself simply by wishing to be free? The soul imprisoned in the material world has committed an offense to the Supreme Lord. He must find a way to lessen that offense. The spirit soul is by nature an eternal servant of Lord Krishna. The root of the soul's offense is that he's forgotten that. Therefore, somehow or another, he should turn his mind to think of the Lord. By gazing at the deity form of the Lord, hearing the description of the Lord's pastimes and other devotional activities, the soul gradually revives his original spiritual nature. The more the soul's original nature is revived, the more the soul can see spirit directly. Serving the deity of the Lord and hearing and chanting the Lord's glories are the only way for the neophyte devotee to make spiritual advancement. For this reason, the great saints have established deity worship in this world. So as the living, as one advances, then one is able to directly perceive spirit. In the neophyte stage, one sees matter. In the intermediate stage, then one understands the spiritual significance, but may or may not be able to have that direct vision. So he's pointing out here that therefore, until one comes to that transcendental platform, then one cannot immediately give up one's dealing with matter. So therefore, then the deity form is important, because then through that through that manifestation, we are able to perceive the Lord. Though it is direct, it's a spiritual form, it's authorized, and then the that transcendental nature is reflected there. So we may see, we may just see the what we think is the what the deity is made from, you know, some earth or stone or metal or like this. But actually, the Lord is there. It is Him, and it is because it is His energy. It's non-different from Him. But at the same time, as we may not perceive the spirit, that's the thing. So as we become purified, then the devotees then can understand that the Lord is present here. Like that, the non-devotees can't understand. They will only see the form of the deity or what the deity is made from. They won't see actually the deity being there. So by having the deity form, then one is able to appreciate the Lord. Otherwise, as you mentioned before, then people would think so far away how we will ever get to meet the Lord, how we will ever get to see the Lord. Mula, is it not better to meditate on an imaginary form within the mind than to make an imaginary deity form out of the material elements? Gaurachandra. They are the same. When the mind is material, it thinks only of material things. You may say Brahman, the Supreme, is all-pervading. Still, the material mind will think Brahman is like the material element ether, which is also all-pervading. However, if I continue to meditate on Brahman in that way, in the course of time, the real truth about Brahman will be manifested in my heart. Time and space are material. If the mind's meditation is not beyond time and space, then how can the mind meditate on something that is beyond the material world? Rejecting the deity form as something made of earth, water, other material elements, you meditate on an imaginary form of the Lord, a form made of time and space. That is worship of a material form of the Lord, a graven image of the Lord. A material so-called form of the Lord is not needed. The Lord is not material, He is spiritual. That is His nature. Therefore, a process is given to the conditioned souls by which they can approach the Supreme Lord, by chanting the Lord's holy names, by narrating His pastimes, by worshipping His deity form. One gradually becomes more and more devoted to the Lord. When the worshipper attains pure devotion, he can see the spiritual form. He can see the spiritual form of the Supreme Lord. Philosophical speculation and fruit of work will not help one to see the Lord. So he's saying that the mind and a deity means, if we're worried about being material, both are material anyway. So the mind is known as para avara, means it can be either absorbed in spirit or it can be absorbed in matter. So until it is purified by hearing and chanting the Lord's name and pastimes and worshipping the deity, then we will not be able to perceive the transcendental. Mula, the Supreme Lord is different from matter. It is said that Satan introduced the worship of material things in order to trap the souls in the material world. Therefore, I think it is not good to worship material things. Gaurachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one without a rival. No one can possibly compete with Him. Everything in this material world is created by him and is dependent on him. The Supreme Lord may be worshipped in many different ways. He is pleased by all these different kinds of worship. It is not that he will become an enemy if someone worships him in a particular way. He is all auspicious. You say that Satan does something, and I say that Satan does not have the power to do anything against the Supreme Lord's will. If Satan exists, then he must be an individual soul dependent upon the Supreme Lord. However, I think that this Satan does not exist. Why not? Because in this material world, nothing can ever be done to thwart the Supreme Lord's will. There is not a single individual soul who is not dependent on the Supreme Lord. You may ask, what is the origin of sin? I reply, the individual soul is by nature a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Awareness of this fact is knowledge. To forget this fact is ignorance. If an individual spirit soul forgets this fact, then he sows the seed of sins in the field of his heart. A person who always remains a liberated associate of the Lord does not plant the seed of sin in his heart. Instead of imagining this mythological Satan, one should honestly see the ignorance in his own heart. Therefore, even if one worships the Supreme Lord as present in the material elements, he commits no offense. Therefore, deity worship is necessary for the neophyte devotee and the source of great auspiciousness for the advanced devotee. Therefore, the idea that the deity worship is not good is only a theory of some thinkers. It is not at all supported by the pure scriptures. Mula, deity worship is not good for attaining love of God. It simply fills the mind with many material ideas. Gaurachandra. So the living entities has... Yeah, so if we worship the Lord, the creation is the Lord, so if we worship the Lord in the creation, then there's no problem. Because the Lord being all auspicious, if he is approached... then whatever how he is approached will then be beneficial, like that. So therefore, then the scriptures give proper ways to see the Lord in this world. So the deity worship then is necessary to establish the fact that we are the Lord's servants. That is the actual. This whole idea that Satan exists, that there's a fallen angel, he is able to do things that God doesn't like. He is able to transgress God's will, and God can do nothing about it, then there's no such thing. It doesn't exist. It means that sin is within each individual's heart, that we have forgotten that we are his servant. And so because of this forgetfulness, so then, forgetting this, then the seeds of sin are planted in the seed of in the field of the heart. Yeah. So he says, one who remains a liberated associate does not plant the seeds in the heart. So that's one gets to that position of being an eternal associate. Then one will not have any problems or connections with this material world. Mula. Deity worship is not good for attaining love of God. It simply fills the mind with many material ideas. Gaurachandra. By studying the ancient history books, we can see that your conclusion is wrong. Many neophyte devotees began their spiritual life by worshipping the deity form of the Lord. As they continue the deity worship in the association of the devotees, they gradually become advanced, and then they can directly see that the deity is the spiritual form of the Supreme Lord himself. Then they become plunged in a great ocean of spiritual love for the Lord. This is the undeniable truth. Association with the devotees of the Lord is the root of all that is good. By associating with spiritually advanced devotees of the Lord, one gradually attains spiritual love for the Lord. When one attains spiritual love for the Lord, the idea that the deity form is material perishes. As one gradually becomes advanced, he attains great good fortune. Non-Aryan religions are generally opposed to deity worship. But look, how many followers of those religions have attained spiritual love for the Lord? They simply spend their time arguing with each other and hating each other. How can they understand loving devotion to the Lord? Yeah, it means, yeah.
mula.
If one has love for the Lord, then there is no fault in his worshipping the deity. However, how can the worship of a dog, a cat, a snake, a debauchee, or some other kind of being be worship of the Supreme Lord? The Honorable Prophet has specifically forbidden worship of the Butte. Gaurachandra. The people in general are grateful to God. Whether they sin or not, they have faith in the supremacy of God. They bow down before the wonders that are displayed in this world. Prompted by their gratitude to God, the ignorant aborigines bow down before the sun, the river, the mountain, or anything that is very big and grand. They offer themselves to these things, and they reveal their hearts to them. Although there is certainly a great difference between spiritual love for the Lord and the worship of material things, the bewildered people who show their gratitude by God by bowing down before these material things gradually attain a good result. Therefore, if you see with the eye of reason, you will not blame them for worshipping material things. One meditates on a formless, all-pervading God, or if without any spiritual love one offers namaz, prayers, or other prayers, then how is that different from worshipping a cat? It is our idea that one should do whatever is necessary to arouse one's love for God. If those neophytes are mocked or attacked, then the path of gradual spiritual advancement will be blocked. Dogmatic people refuse to honor the followers of other religions. They mock and attack others who do not worship in the same way they do. They make a great mistake. Mula. Should it then be said that everything is God and the worship of anything is the worship of God? Is the worship of sins worship of God? Is the worship of sinful desires worship of God? Is God pleased by any kind of worship? Gaurachandra, we do not say that everything is God. Rather, God is different from all else. Everything is created by God and dependent upon Him. Everything has a relationship with God. By following the thread of that relationship, anything can lead one to become curious about God. Therefore, the sutra says, curiosity pushes one to taste things. Therefore, this kind of curiosity gradually pushes one to try to experience what is spirit. You are all great pundits. You are merciful and generous. You will understand what is the truth of this. We are only poor Vaishnavas. We do not like to enter into debates. If you give permission, we will now hear the musical play Sri Chaitanya Mangala. Yes, so not that everything is God. God is separate, but everything is created by Him and everything is dependent upon them. So it means everything is connected to Him. So if you follow that thread of the object and its dependency or its connection to God, then you can get to Him. So that is their point. So then all these different things can be established. Okay, there's only a little bit more. No one could understand what conclusion the mullah came to by hearing these arguments. After a short silence, he said, "I am glad to hear your arguments. I will come on another day and ask about something else. Now it is late. We wish to return to our homes." After speaking these words, the Mulla Sahib and his followers mounted their horses and left for Satasaika, Paragana. The Babaji's happily called out the holy names of Lord Hari and entered the temple to hear the play Sri Chaitanya Mangala. Any questions on this? In other words, if someone is appreciating God and His greatness, but is seeing it through the material elements, then it, in a very slow way, then that will bring them slowly towards the proper path. Because everything is connected to the Lord and dependent upon the Lord. But, you know, but it's very slow. Krishna mentions all these different things, the slow path, going through, seeing the Lord in everything, and appreciating His energies and everything like this. So the more one knows, the more one knows about, these people are only knowing matter. They don't know spirit. So then when you add the element, like in Gita, of spirit to it, then it comes to a higher level. It means people see energy and they respect it. Higher than that, then is then to be able to appreciate the rules that God gives in connection with matter, how to deal with that matter in connection with Him. Higher than that is understanding the nature of the soul. And then higher than that, then is understanding the relationship of the Lord with the devotees. So gradually then the process takes us through this. But if one has that understanding in the beginning, then things go much more quick. Things develop much better like that. It means it won't take, it doesn't have to take, many lifetimes in a very quick way, because one is starting by understanding that Krishna is in everything. You know, it is His energy that makes everything function. So we understand Him directly. We know who Krishna is. We hear about Him. We know His directions. How He explains how He enters and all these things. But more important than this is devotion. So when we worship Him in devotion rather than just respect His greatness, and then, you know, expect to get things from Him, then that is a better situation. So then we see is what the acharyas have given, and is very direct. So by hearing the name of the Lord, hearing His pastimes, associating with devotees, worshiping the deity, like this, living in the Lord's dham, then one can advance very nicely. Does this make any sense? Any questions on this? Or? So the idea is we're trying to reawaken our understanding of realization that we're His servant, and that we are attracted to the Lord, and we want to develop love for the Lord. So therefore it's necessary to hear about Him and His pastimes, what He does with His devotees and all that, so that those exchanges of affection between the Lord and His devotees, that's very important, because that then attracts us there. The other aspects of the philosophy are for breaking our attachments to the material world. The material world, we have so many of these mundane attachments. And so then, by that knowledge, we're able to break those attachments. But breaking those attachments is not enough. One has to, because you may break attachments from the material world, but that doesn't mean you have understood that we're a servant of Krishna. We have to take the step to understand that we are Krishna's servant. And so then, what does that mean? Servant. What does a servant do? Therefore, then you have the whole process of hearing about the Lord's pastimes. You know, that's there. And then how do we serve the Lord? Okay, we're servant. How do we serve? So that's by chanting, hearing and chanting the Lord's holy names, and hearing His pastimes, and worshipping the deity. So by worshiping the deity, then we can perform all kinds of services that we hear about that the devotees perform. Does that make some sense? Something else? Then? See, worship of the deity form, see, means there's different ways you can approach. But the main principle is that the things are done in relationship to the deity. It's not that we have to be the one directly doing the worship. If we take part in that worship, assist in that worship, or see that worship, we get the same benefit as the person who directly performs the worship. So it's like Mangal Arati, then you have, you know, one person actually worshipping the deity. Right? But everybody in the temple gets the same benefit. So that's an important element to understand in that. That's why there's not a need to create this idea that unless everybody can directly come and do the worship, and that no one can advance, there's not equal opportunity. Equal opportunity means that everybody can make the same spiritual advancement. Therefore, the one doing the worship, the one watching. Otherwise, you have 700 devotees here. How will everybody offer Mangala Arati? Okay, so you could take turns. Everybody can do it once every 2 years. Okay, so nice. But that process would be a little slow. Then the better process is have one person do the Arati, and then the other 699 watch. And then they all get the same benefit. Therefore, every day one can get the benefit of worshipping the deity. Does that make sense? That's why these other concepts are basically materially motivated. They're not actually understanding the scriptures or purely. It means Krishna is surrounded by so many devotees. And it's not... means at any one time all of them are doing direct service. Some are doing and others are taking part, assisting, watching like this. But they all get the same benefit. Mother Jashoda is holding Krishna on his lap. All the other, elder gopis, then by seeing that and by doing other arrangements for serving Krishna in that situation, they're all getting the same benefit. Right? It's not that unless they hold Krishna directly on their lap, then only they are getting the benefit of parental rasa. The point is that we are servant of the servant. The idea that we have to be in the front, it's a material thing, because then you're dealing with time and space. And the deity worship, chanting, the spiritual activity aren't dealing with time and space. It means whether you're 1 inch away from the Lord or 1 mile away from the Lord, what's the difference? You're away from the Lord. And whether you touch Him with your hand or you touch Him with your eyes or you touch Him with your ears, what is the difference? Why touching with the hand is superior than touching with the eyes? So that is the thing, is that there's material considerations there. The idea that the servant of the servant of the servant, that we're trying to avoid. We want to be, okay, we'll agree to be the servant, but we're the servant, rather than we're the servant of the servant of the servant. So these things then create a bit, some difficulty. Does that make sense? That's another aspect. See, is whether you pass it on or not, that's another thing. The point is that the service is being done to please Krishna. Perfection is pleasing Krishna. And because Krishna is pleased, we will be happy. But our motive is not to please ourselves. Our motive is to please Krishna. So that's the meaning of pure, unalloyed devotional service. Like that. Pure devotional service means it's without any material motive. There may be spiritual motive, but no material motive. The pure unalloyed means there's no spiritual motive either. So only Krishna's happiness is there. Giving it to others then is the next step. Like that. So they go together, but it's not that... they go together. Does that make sense? That's why the preaching mission is there. Is then we are benefited, and then we try to benefit others. Like that.
So then that's, it's part of the hearing and chanting then means, chanting means you will tell others. Share with others, tell others, like this. Is that okay? Or like that? Yeah. So they're just different aspects of the same. Because if we want to please Krishna, and Krishna wants to see it spread, that's why we're spreading it. It's not that we're spreading it, and therefore we're the good guys. It's that Krishna wants we serve Krishna, and he wants to see everybody engaged in that. So therefore the whole motive to the whole thing is to please Krishna. Is that okay? Does that make sense? So the motive on both say. Otherwise, then we may think that I am the one that's spreading it, benedicting others. Therefore, I am a great Vaishnava, I am a preacher, I am guru of Vaishnavas. And then that will create an obstacle in our development. Right? Because that is also for Krishna's pleasure, because Krishna wants it to be. You know, you've heard, so then you tell someone else. What's special is what you're telling, not ourselves. You know, we always like to take the credit and, you know, give ourselves a special position. But what's special is what we're talking about. Otherwise, you're standing before a crowd of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, and then you're telling them, you know, about something mundane. You know, what's the... No, so it's what you're speaking about is what makes it special, not us. We may be fortunate that we may be doing, but same time is the one who speaks about Krishna, the one who hears about Krishna, they're both equally benefited. Like that. So the same is as in the deity worship. You have one person speaking and everyone else listening. If everybody started to talk at once, you know, okay, let us discuss Krishna Katha. You know, so get 700 people together in the temple room and all will start speaking at the same time. You know, because only if you speak, then you will... You know, so we have to see is that we don't give ourselves that credit. You know? Then it's good. Is that okay? Some other points? See, the point the principle is that someone who can help one person, that, I mean, someone who can do an activity, they do that. You know, they do that activity. So if someone's qualified, then that's the essential thing. It's just like, can a fat person cook? Or can a thin person cook? Or a young person cook? Or an old person cook? Or can men cook or women cook? No, it's who can cook, they cook. That's the principle. So the question comes up, see, it's a mundane approach to bring up the question, can women be gurus? Because the point is, well, but what does it mean? Can men be gurus? Okay, but can men be gurus? Okay, yes. Okay, so then that answers the question. You know what I'm saying? If we just say, can men be guru? And we say, yes. Now, is our problem of going back to Godhead solved? No, you have to find a qualified person who can perform that function, who can help you progress. So what are the qualities of that person? That's the real question. So women can do fine. No problem. But the difficulty comes is they can do. It's not a problem at all. But the difficulty comes is there's a tendency to see women according to their conditioned nature, while men not as much. Right? That is the weakness of it. It can easily be done. There's no problem. But then then why are they approaching? Who will do it? You know what I'm saying? Then how do you decide what are the qualifications? Young woman, old woman. You know? Means what is going to be, what are the qualifications? You know, we say same as men. Okay, but the men, so it's one of these questions of what is the motive behind it? What is the purpose of asking the question? Is there a woman in mind that people have great faith in, and she is helping, you know, people advance very nicely, and by taking up the position of Diksha Guru, it would enhance that service even more? Are we talking about that? Or are we just talking about a politically, surcharge point that is a very delicate issue on the mundane American political front? And that's the only reason it's brought up. You know what I'm saying? No, what I'm saying is, what's the need of the question? What's the purpose of the question? What are we answering by answering that question? We can say yes and then move on. Can they give diksha? Yes. Okay, let's move on. That's it. The answer is yes. But then, what is the purpose of the question? What do they want to do? Whole idea is devotees are very disturbed by, you know, finding that many gurus in the past have been materially motivated or had material weaknesses. So then, if we see in the natural nature of women that's even more than in men, then you're already starting with something in a more weak position that is the cause of people having a lack of faith in the present gurus and in the system. So then, if we're talking generic, since they're just using women, then you're starting on a platform that the conditioned nature itself is in a weaker position than the men's one. Because the women's field will be that of the mind and emotions, the men of the intelligence. So we're getting out of this material world in the beginning through intelligence, at the end through emotions, but those are spiritual emotions. So one has to differentiate to get from material emotion to spiritual emotion. That means in the middle you have to use the intelligence. Therefore, generally speaking, you see as the major front of that, then everyone takes advantage of men. The women take advantage of the men, and the men take advantage of the men for that. So if we're talking very generically, then what is the, you know, then that would be an answer. But the question, the point is, does it answer the question? What is the purpose? You know, people want to say, we want to see equality. What does equality mean? You know? Does that mean that, okay, so the women, okay, so then equality. Okay, the men grow their hair long and wear, you know, nice saris and stuff like that. Or the women should shave up and, you know, keep two pieces of cloth and, you know, and that's it. But I'm saying, what's the purpose? Okay, we want to know the opinion. For what reason? What will we do with it? Makes us digest our morning breakfast better? Or what will we do with it? That's the point. What will we do with this knowledge? It means, is there an application? If there's no application, why discuss it? In theory, yes. Step forward and take a position and become gurus of Vaishnavas. A chance for what? Oh, you can only progress if you're a guru then. So no one can progress unless they're a guru. So this is the point. We're talking about position, power, influence, wealth, respect, dhanam, janam, sundarim. Why are they going to come to the woman? Because she's beautiful. Because she's sweet. She's nice. Are they coming because of her knowledge or because of her emotional disposition? That's the question. Right? Just as we see it's a weak relationship between the disciple and the guru if they base it, even though he's a man, they base it on these things. Oh, he's sweet. Oh, he's nice. He's kind. It's good.
But if that's all there is, Guru is supposed to, is more than that. Guru is to help you go back to Godhead, not just to be sweet and smile at you. So then what's going to be the special thing the woman has? If she has that knowledge, she can give that knowledge, great. But then let's see it. But the point is if they're busy taking care of their babies, out after their third husband, this, that, then what happens? Okay, then what happens when this Guru Mata marries one of her disciples? One of her male disciples. Of course, if marries one of the female, then we won't even discuss it. But marries one of the male disciples. Then that'll be okay, right? But if the men marry the female, then that's, you know, they should be hanged and shot. So, I mean, it's just, what's the purpose behind it? That's the point. Is the question is, can they be? Yes, if they're qualified. Bus. That's the end of the discussion. So if it's a crusade, it's a push, they can do it. They can make as many as they want, and they can watch them fall down as much as the men fall down. There's no special thing that women gurus won't fall down. Indians fall down, old Indians fall down, women fall down, men fall down, anyone in the material world falls down. So it's not a solution to, you know, all these, you know, chauvinistic men and all this like that. We don't need chauvinistic women. It's not a solution. You know? So the solution is Krishna consciousness. So if someone's Krishna conscious, someone is qualified, fine. But why are they coming to them? Fine, they can do. But can they handle that? Women are comfortable in the association of those who are intimate to them. And then suddenly they have hundreds of people come after them. Maybe nice. But are they going to be able to keep it on an even keel? Right? The emotions running deeper. How much more they'll get into these things and attach to this and attach to that. We're complaining the men are doing that. By nature, men are a little less attached. Women are more. So then it'll be more. So it's not a solution to the problem. If someone's qualified and they do it, great. But to say that, okay, we have 80 men doing, we should have 80 women, it doesn't make any sense, you know? So we have, you know, 80 men, they're not having children, right? Men don't get pregnant. We have 80 women getting pregnant. So equality means, oh, we should work out how 80 men can get pregnant. It won't happen. So we have to understand is that it's God's nature. You know, God made men, God made women, and it's time for us to stop playing around with it. And just accept it the way God made it. If someone's qualified, great. There were women gurus. Yes, you can count them on one hand. And there were millions and billions of men gurus. So, okay, a few, it's just like, it's the normal thing. You get the teenage girl. And she's telling her father, everybody's going out, you know, why I have to stay home. If you actually inquire, you find out it's one girl next door is going out and all the other girls are not necessarily. So we have to be very, very careful about the mundane aspects. Like that. If they're qualified, great. But to make a philosophy out of it, to make a movement out of it, to make this kind of a political front out of it, it's absolutely useless for our spiritual life if we're going back to Godhead. If they want to be, yes. Janava was a guru. She sat behind a curtain and gave class. Right? As a man, I'm uncomfortable sitting and having a lot of people look at me. And they're not looking at my beauty. But if a woman was sitting there, how many men are looking at her from her feminine movements and nature? And is that what you want? Is that what we want? Is that what the women want? You know what I'm saying? If they do, great. But there's another name for it. It's not called guru. You know? Urvasi, everybody looks at Urvasi. She doesn't mind. But she's not taking the position of guru. So that is the danger in it. It can be done. But then you have to then sort what is the purpose behind it. And then you have men that will be attached to the women as guru, as mother, like this. But how much of it's actually spiritual and how much of it's just emotional dependency upon women? And then those people, then they may be very, they may, if it's emotional, then it may be, they may become weak.
So therefore, that's why, as far as theory goes, yes, they can be gurus, no problem if they're qualified. But you have much more material considerations to filter through than you will if you have men. That's the weakness of it. The platform you're starting from and the conditioned nature, the reactions that it will create in other people, and all these, you're dealing with a higher risk factor. A higher material, mundane risk factor. Emotional and sensual. Like that. So that is there, but they can do it. It's not a fault. It's not wrong. They can do. But because of that, then one should be very careful about it. And those that are not careful about it, then we'll see so much trouble happening. You know? Right? It's like of men who join, you know, a great percentage gets married. Women who join, a greater percentage gets married. They need those environments. People moving out, you know, some there, but people moving out of the movement in their 40s and all that, then, you know, it's all emotional things. Emotional needs, material needs. It's not spiritual needs. You know? So we have to be very, very careful of these things because they're going on in the society at this time. Men and women are becoming bewildered by their emotional needs. So we have to be careful that then we don't create a front on which there'll be more emotional problems. That's all. But as far as the theory goes, there's no problem in it. General thing is a man, if he has basic qualification, he can do it. A woman, unless she's highly qualified, it's not recommended they do it. Means if she's on the liberated platform, then there's basically very few restrictions. You know, they worship Shaligram, they can be guru, they can do all that, because they're not on the bodily platform, they're beyond it. They are beyond it. But in fact, so basically you see as women as gurus were only uttamas. Men as gurus, it's recommended they're uttamas, but if they're madhyams or kanistas, it can still work. But if women are madhyamas, it'll work to some degree. But if they're kanistas, then what's going to be the reason that they're accepting money from their family? I mean, from their disciples. Where's it going to go? Into plane tickets? Flying around the world? Being at all the big festivals? Giving for this or that? Or, you know, it will go into her house. You know, facilities for her kids. You know what I'm saying? May do nice things for the deities and, you know what I'm saying? And give nicely in there. But it'll be things that are hers rather than someone else's. Does that make sense? Like that. So one has to see. Therefore, then the kanista level should be very much avoided of a woman being a guru. Madhyama could start to work, but if it's on the uttama, then you're not dealing with a woman. Right? So that would be the tradition. Like you see that Vaishnavi who before came to entice Haridas Thakur, right? And then by his association, then she became an advanced Vaishnava. You know, she accepted one piece of cloth and shaved her head and sat down and chanted 3 lakhs of rounds every day in front of Tulsi. Then, and you know, she didn't make any arrangements for her own facilities. You know, she used the hut that he had given, that he was living in. She just stayed there. She made no arrangements for her economic development. But everybody was impressed with her advancement, and then they came and they took care. So then many people would come and discuss things and advance Vaishnavas and like that. So because she's on that advanced level, therefore. But otherwise, if she's not on that level, then one still has to be very careful. You know? It means malati, but yeah, you just have to be careful. Because even if she's pure, you can't guarantee that the men are going to be pure in dealing with them. Like that. Does that make some sense? Like that. So the thing is you have the, you know, social considerations in it because of the nature of it. Yeah, that's all. But theoretically, there's no problem at all. Yeah. No, not that they worship. I'm saying that there are restrictions generally on women worshipping Shaligram like this. But if they are liberated, means they're on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, there's no restriction. Generally they don't. Because Shaligram, the whole purpose of Shaligram is not sentiment, it is hardcore rules. Right? You're into sentiment, worship a Archimurti. You're into technical, hardcore rules, worship Shaligram. Because he's come that small, because you can do all the items of worship for him. You can bathe him, you can do all the different things and like that, and technically, and maintain all the standards of cleanliness. The technical rules. Like you see, Advaitacharya would worship him with just water and tulsi. But all the technical rules are being done. He didn't just pour some water and stick a tulsi on top. All the 16 items, all the little technical things, the standards of cleanliness, all these different things. So if you can get to that technical point, we don't mind. Any lady who wants to learn, step forward, we can teach them. But I've seen is women like dressing the deities, putting ornaments, doing their hair, putting garlands, tulsi, feeding them, you know, putting him in bed, taking him out of bed. That's what the women like about the worship. Not that you have five items like this in the Argya, and then you have the regular Argya, you have the Viloma Argya, that you chant the letters of the Sanskrit alphabet backwards into. You know, you have the water for washing your hands gross. You have the subtle water for your hands and the items. You have the one for worshipping the deity. You know? I mean, it's all these different things. These are things that are generally, they're not so appreciated. That's Shaligram worship. You're not going to do that, don't bother. Don't worship deities. You know? We've developed this whole thing, Shaligram, all this sweet, nice little... No, sweet means is he's small, so therefore he expects everything to be done. That's the whole purpose. It can be done. It means we're doing, devotees are doing, but they're doing so many things. They're also getting married 20 times and running off with this one and that one and blaspheming their seniors and changing gurus at the drop of a hat and, you know, everything else too. So, I mean, it you know, it all goes together. It's not that it's...
Can you worship and not have those?
Well, at least there should be a high standard of cleanliness. If you can take a full bath every day before you worship... And then what? Huh? Okay. And then all your clothes and everything have to be clean. You can't have worn them in the bathroom before you've done the worship. You can't have eaten in those clothes. Where you're sitting has to be clean. And what are you going to do for the days of the month when you're in your uncleanliness time? Who will do the worship then? If you touch the deity, then you can't say you're clean. You know, it's like if you passed stool and didn't wash yourself. Then why not do Manasa Puja all the time? Why don't you Manasa Puja feed your kid 3 days a month? Try it. See what happens. See how happy your kid is. That's what I'm saying. What is the purpose? It's just sentiment. You understand the point? So we want to do. You want to have the cake. You want to eat it. You want to put it in the fair, win a prize for it. You want to sell it and get lots of money for it. But there's only one cake. You can only do one thing with it. Does that make some sense? So the emotions to do all those things, then we can do, but then what's the purpose? It can be done. I mean, I'm not going to say anything. But what I'm saying is the traditions are one thing. And devotees couldn't give a damn about traditions. They just take them and throw them right out the window. Devotees don't care about traditions. Because of sentiment. You can't discuss something logically. You can't, nothing. Then it's all Prabhupada. Prabhupada
he introduced it here after the standards are very high with men worshipping in another place with men worshipping. When the Shaligrams first came into the movement, when Prabhupada was here, devotees wouldn't touch them. They were afraid to death of touching them. The Shaligram that came here, the original one, sat in the Calcutta temple unworshipped for days. No one would touch him. Because they knew if he did something wrong, then he'd go to hell. So no one would touch him. Like that. And this is when Prabhupada was here. Purusha Shukta would be chanted at a very high level. That was the whole idea, was on that level. You know, that's what it's for. Traditionally, Brahmins would worship. And they do it daily, though they do simply. It was part of the Brahminical lifestyle. The wife would help, but generally she doesn't do the worship. If something that husband was inconvenienced, then she might. But otherwise, it's a normal thing, she wouldn't. You know, just like if the wife is busy doing something, the husband may hold the baby, but generally the wife holds the baby. Right? She knows what to do with the baby. The man doesn't really. He has some sentiment towards the baby, but he doesn't really know what's going on. So that's the thing. You know, it sounds harsh, but because it sounds harsh to the emotions, it doesn't sound harsh to the intellect at all. Intellect, there's rules and that, and they're followed by us. Does that make sense? So Manasapuja, then why not do Manasapuja all the time? Yes, but then what do you do on those 3 days? Would you like it that you have something that you want and then 3 days just somebody's not there? So that's the point. God is a person. Is the worship to please God or ourselves? If it's for ourselves, then what everybody's doing in this movement is perfectly fine. If it's to please God, then we have some discussions. God doesn't like things changing. Prabhupada didn't like servants changing. He's trained somebody, somebody's there, he's shown him how to do the massage or cook, he expects that person there. If we just add a sentiment, someone else comes in, Prabhupada was not happy. It's changed. Let's say you showed someone how to do something, how to cook the rice the way you like it. And then the next day someone else comes in, oh, Guru Maharaj, I wanted to cook, and then they cook it. So, will that be the most pleasing thing to the Guru? Just the sentiment is enough. Right? Sentiment being done to please the Lord and the devotees, that's what we're looking for. The sentiment that pleases ourselves, that looks like it's for them, that we try to reduce. It's better than nothing, means that what we're talking here. Means comparatively speaking to any other religious process and all that, it's very good, very advanced. But if we really want to talk technical about pleasing the Lord, then it's something to look into.
So it's virtually very rare for a woman to worship Shaligram by herself and please the Lord.
Well, traditionally, you don't even hear about it.
So what do you do if you really want? I mean, I'm just getting the person.
But then in that case, then you shouldn't have asked me. Then it's not proper to have asked me this. If your guru has given you in worship, don't ask me these things, because then you just create duality. I know temple worship. I know the Shaligram worship. I teach people how to do it. If your guru has given you instructions and all that, then you go with those instructions. That is your thing. Then to ask questions like this is improper. You know? I know the temple worship and the traditional things like this. Home worship, you ask Jananivas, other people who are more experienced. You know, we do the technical worship. We know that. We know the traditions. You know, like that. These other forms of it, then they can do it. You know, but the point is some purity is expected. That is there. I've seen the women that he has given it to, they're quite pure. And he expects them to remain pure. And they start doing weird things, and I'm sure that he would not be very pleased. Like little girls are pure. So if women have that same purity, I've seen he may give them shaligrams.
But if they start acting like a cat or a tigress, there's a good chance he may take the shaligrams back. But he just came to you and just said, here's a shaligram, worship it, or you asked if you could worship it? Okay. So then you have your answer, then do it.
Yeah.
Govardhan, if he's alone without shaligram, you have to worship him with the 16 items. So technically it's the same, but you don't have to get into as many rules. Just the 16 items is there, though we emphasize the 5 main ones. You know, nice food, nice ornaments, nice clothes, nice flowers, and what's it? Food? Oh, and nice scents. You know, oils, incense, those things. We emphasize those 5 on any of the deities, but especially on Govardhan. Like that. But the 16 items must be there. If a shaligram is there, or another deity that you're worshipping with 16 items, then you close that little thing. Then you bring in the clock. Then you only have to worship him with those 5 items in a bath. Then it's reduced. Like that. But if he's on his own, then you have to worship with all of them. See, when you have an order of guru, you can't doubt it. You just have to follow it. Otherwise, you create doubts in your own mind, you create doubts amongst others. See, I have no problem with any of these things. But if there's an attitude, it annoys me immensely. I have no problem with women doing whatever it is that they all demand that they want to do. It, to me, it's perfectly fine. They want to be managers, GBCs, do all the puja, be gurus, you know, go to the moon, worship the Shah. It doesn't bother me at all. But if they're an attitude, they're doing it because they're women, then according to Kapila Muni, their service is in the mode of ignorance, and such people should be avoided like the plague, even though they're devotees. I stand very strong. I have no problem with anybody doing it, but if they're doing it because they're a woman, they're giving the Bhagavatam class because they're a woman, they're elbowing their way up to the front and bathing the deity in front of everyone because they're a woman, I spit on their face. Like that. It has nothing to do with devotional service, it's just their own and aggrandizement because they happen to be a woman and they're proud of it. And they think they are one. That's all. But if out of devotion and all that it's going on and it happens, then I have no problem. And if they say, well, the men don't allow this, that, so then that's the obstacle. You just go with it. It's just the way it goes. Means political correctness means political correctness. People don't like it, then that's the way it goes. Political correctness is what? Vox populi. It's just what the people want. That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with reality. What God wants. It's just what people want. So if people don't like it, that's vox populi. And you'll have very hard time establishing that the American vox populi is the vox populi, and the vox populi of the rest of the world is not. Because you have to understand, basically America practically stands on its own when it comes to its stand on all these different sociological things.
Most other people think Americans are crazy. Americans think they're very special, but most other cultures of the world don't appreciate Americans and their culture. They like their money, they like their sense gratification, but they don't like the Americans or their dealings. So if, you know, some people in America, you know, even if we take every American, all 260 million of them, then they feel the women should be doing the worship, bathing the deities in Mayapur. Fine. But what about the 1 billion people in India that maybe think otherwise? Why is the American vox populi is more important than the Indian? You say the Indian, then they'll say they're mundane. You know, why do we have to cater to this mundane mentality? But what's so spiritual about the American? This is the problem. We're not talking Krishna consciousness in these things. That's the problem. Krishna consciousness in these areas disappeared years ago. Like that. We're not talking Krishna consciousness. We're just talking people wanting something. They want to make something for themselves in this world, get something what they want in this world. And then what's the use? What's the meaning? So what? Then I remember one class one devotee gave. Yeah, you want to be the big devotee? Yes, be the big devotee. And you can be here being the big devotee birth after birth after birth. Everyone else will have gone back to Godhead. You know? I've had it myself. I had it happen twice. The same lady. Her husband took sannyas. He gets the glory. Everybody notices him. What about me? No one cares for me. You know? I says, you know, you're one of the senior women. You know, you're wearing white. Nobody cares about the white. You know, what does she want? Roll out a red carpet or what? You know? I've heard it. And I've heard it from others also. One stands out very strongly. So what's the meaning? What's your purpose? Women want to give the class. Okay, then they said, give the class. Step forward. Where are the women that want to give the class? Months and months arguing about it. Then it's, okay, give the class. Where are they? A couple stood forward, gave a couple of classes, and then you didn't see them anymore. So, fine. They want to bathe the deities. Okay, then they offer. We'll set up, we'll make a whole arrangement for you to bathe the deities up in the conference room, have your own kirtans, do everything yourself, you know, forget all these stupid men. They don't want it. They want to bathe in front of everybody. Everybody should be able to see. If you do it upstairs, then only the women will see. You know? I mean, funny, funny things. Now they've made the things like this, okay, that's happening. And then after they've got that, then what next? What next to keep the bile moving? What next to satisfy our mundane needs for mundane politics? Because equality, what is equality? Right? You have an elephant and you have a dog. And they're both spirit souls, Prabhu. So they must be treated equally. So does that mean the dog's going to eat 500, you know, kilos of food a day? Or the elephant's going to be eating canned dog food? Which is it? Right? Or the dog's going to be getting a bath every day like the elephant? Or the elephant, we don't bother, we just, you know, take him down to the corner and give him a poodle cut. You know what I'm saying? So, what does equality mean? According to their nature, what everybody needs. So that's different. A baby, his need is different than an adult. But if you feed the baby, you know, he gets his milk and the adult gets his rice and dal, that's considered equal. So the problem is equal is not externally looking the same. That's communism. And communism, when you apply it, communism works for Shudras. It doesn't work for Brahmin, Kshatriyas, or Vaishyas. It doesn't work. Therefore, this communistic idea is being thrust upon the Dvija community is nonsense. It's a political thing and it only applies there. Where it externally looks the same. One has to get the result in a way that's good. You know? I mean, if women are so worried about worshipping the deities, why do we have 350 temples around the world that are dying to get pujaris, right? And I only know of about three or four of them that women can't worship in. And those aren't the ones that are dying for pujaris at all. The ones where the women aren't at all, they don't need them. They have excess. But the ones where they allow the women to worship, they can worship all they want. In fact, they can be the head pujari and can be only women doing the worship. 350 temples dying for pujaris. And who do they take? Men from Mayapur. Men from India. They're not flying in women from India. They're not flying in women from other parts of America or Europe or that. So it's just talk. It's just a political issue. The reality is there's tons of scope. Tons of scope. But it's not happening. Therefore, that's why I get so annoyed about these things. It's one thing if all the temples are packed up and there's so many women, they just really want to do it. Is that hail? Because there's so many elements, and the difficulty with issues is that you're not dealing really with intelligence. At least the modern issues aren't. They're not intelligence at all. They're only emotions. You know, all the different issues I've seen, they're just emotions. They're not dealing with intelligence like that. Otherwise, then we could deal with it in a different way. Of course. The responses are also not necessarily intelligent. They're also emotional. So the point is we don't mind. If we want to work on a very pure platform, then that pure platform should be seen across the board. You know? The same women demanding that women's rights in so many things are the same women that, you know, are you know, shooting down the gurus, the GBC, the sannyasis. So then we're not talking the same thing here. We're talking that we're a Madhyama movement, we're a Vaishnava movement, we're a Gaudiya Vaishnava movement. The rules and regulations aren't the strong motivating force behind it. Then great. Then why so much bureaucracy? Why so many rules? Why so many committees? And those committees are making what? Rules. So committees' rules we got to follow. God's rules we don't. American tradition we have to follow. Vaishnava tradition we don't. So it's so inconsistent. Therefore, I find difficulty taking this seriously. If there was a consistency, then it's nice. Then fine. It can be very nice and sweet. And we're saying, yes, when Prabhupada is here, so many things in the early days, yes. But in the early days also, the grihasthas lived in a little room with nothing, and they didn't care. They went out and left, and went and opened up centers, went around the world, didn't care. Today, they care very much. Right? Major discussion in any community is ownership of the land and building that they're in. Major consideration. I've seen communities talking about it for years and it doesn't get off the ground. No one will come and invest one paisa in the place unless they own it. This house is mine. I can give it to my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. If it's just a matter of you do service, we'll give you a place, no trust. You'll boot us out on our ass, right? Why? Because that person booted so many people out when he was the president. This is not locked. Oh, it is. Is it? No, it's not. It didn't. We got to pull it in. It's okay. So we're not dealing with the problem is these are the philosophical point is yes, they can do it. That's it. That's the end of it. The problem comes in the cultural aspect. In the sense we don't have a culture, therefore you can never answer these questions. There'll eternally be issues. There'll eternally be issues. You know? That's the problem. And that's the difficulty. And we've seen what Prabhupada thought about all these kind of issues. He just when the women would come in from these angles, he'd shut it down. Always shut it down. The journalists would always come with that. He just shut them right down. Of course, he was so expert, he could do it where everybody was pleased. Like that one famous one, you know, about the dress and all that. The Prabhupada said, better to have a cool head and warm legs. Like that. The lady didn't know what to say. But they went away happy. Because he's pure. So the point is there's God's system. If we follow it, it works. If we follow the system, within the system, there's a huge amount of area. If the women really want to worship deities, they can have deities in their house and worship. You know? They can worship, do all the worship they want. You know? Because even if you don't, how many can do the worship here? You know, and then once you introduce the women on the altar here and back, then what happens? How many pujaris have been married recently? Like women who are around? Right? They're in their pujari room, they bump into each other, the simple village boys, you have the ladies in there, and then is puja the main thing on their minds? No. Just like when you have co-education between boys and girls. Are their minds on the education or are their minds on each other? You put a bunch of teenagers in a classroom sitting right next to each other and they're focused on what's going on in the class or focused on the girl next to them or the boy next to them or the boy in the back or the girl in the front. So if we really want education, then educate. Then separate them and then they'll get educated. So in the same way, we really want worship, yes, okay. Men do worship here, women do worship in the home. Yeah, because there's no need. That's the point. That's where also we come back to the sentimental problem. Is because we want to be the person in the front. We want to be standing there. We don't want to have to stand behind Lalita, Vishaka, Rupa, and Rati, behind all the acharyas, behind Prabhupada, behind our guru, and maybe other senior gurus way in the back. We want to be right up there in the front. We're the one that's handing the palm to Radha and Krishna. We're the one that's fanning them and all that, and stuff everybody else in the back. If we're not in the front, then, you know, forget it. I'm not interested. So because of this, then we have all these spiritual problems. Women want to do a yajna, great. Just sit down and watch it, you get the same benefit. You want to do the puja, you just watch it, you get the same benefit. There's no difference. Or you donate for it, you get the same. The person who donates for the arti, or the boga, or for the dress, it's the same benefit as the people who do that service. It's so designed. Therefore, better they don't. But I'm addressing the point is that unless they are personally doing it themselves with their own feminine body, with their own feminine senses, then they don't feel they've done anything. Because if I preach this way anywhere else, I'll be shot. That's why. If I go to a lecture now and preach this, I'll be run out on a rail. There'll be a few people who stand up and say bravo, and everybody else will just think, here's another one of those weirdos. You can't talk our tradition. They don't want to hear it. So therefore, we do, we try. We run into some flack now and again. It means I don't mind, you know, we already, our name's already mud, so a little more mud doesn't matter. But the point is previously it was spoken, but not in the right way. Before the brahmacharis and sannyasis would deal with these issues, but not on a good platform. They were dealing with it in a mundane way. So because of that, now even if you deal with it in the proper way, because it sounds similar, therefore, the cow was in the barn when it caught on fire, and anything red means fire. So therefore, it's very difficult to discuss. It'll take more time, and then it can be discussed. Because the points are nice. The thing is that everybody has to be situated properly. And if they're situated nicely, everybody's happy, then you can loosen things up. You know? You can loosen things, but you still have to be careful. You still can't cross the rules. You know? It means the attachment, the mind of anybody, but especially the mind of the woman, you have to be very careful of. Because once it moves, it's not working on intelligence. Men, you can get in there with the crowbar of intelligence and kind of like pull things out. Very difficult, but they can handle it. Especially if it's done really roughly, if it needs to be. But with women, once it's gone, if they're in an emotional mood, it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter. So you have the woman in there, she's just in there because she's serving Radha and Krishna and polishing their paraphernalia, and the boy walks by and puts something in the thing, and he happened to look at her, and she looked at him, and their eyes met, and then the music swelled up, and then the sun, you know, went down, and the butterflies started flying, and then what do you say? How do you correct it? A girl's given her heart. That's it. Finished. End of story. They get married. But then he needs his house because she, you know, is not going to live in some little hovel somewhere. And then she needs this, and then he's got to do this and that, and then he's not doing kumji anymore and all these different things, and neither is she. You know, the girl that married to Pujari, is she still doing puja? Maybe, maybe not. So that's the whole thing, is that it may have had proper intent. But then when something goes wrong, how do you correct it? Therefore, in the Vedic culture, they would just avoid it. It's trouble, therefore you avoid it. Like that. If you can deal on the highest platform, yes, then so many things can be adjusted. But they're adjusted in a different way than how we're adjusting it. You know? I've seen Bengali gurus, not our own, outside come with these very high class guru from high class Brahmin family, come with these other high class Bengali families, and they come to take bath in the Jamuna, and they all take bath together. They all get in the same place and that. But if you see how they deal, then you know it's just like you don't see it around these parts. You're dealing with high class humans. You know? Women are mothers. It doesn't matter what age they are. They're mothers. They're younger than you. They do with you as a mother. You know? They don't say, "Do you know what mother means? You know why they're calling us mothers?" They don't say that. They are mothers. You know? It's just so different. They know how to dress, they know how to do everything, how to speak, how to, you know, how to take, accept respect as a mother, at the same time maintain their proper interaction with others or dependency upon others. They just know how to do these. They know how to balance. But the West, it's all or nothing. It's all one way or all the other. You can't have a situation where someone is respected, but at the same time they respect the other and leave them alone. Senior devotee is there. Okay, he doesn't have a management portfolio. You respect him as a senior Vaishnava. Next thing, he wants to control the temple. He won't just be the senior Vaishnava and accept there and then accept the other person. If I'm the senior Vaishnava, everybody else is, they're new. So that's the problem. You give the respect to the women and then they take advantage of it. You know, you give the respect to this one or that one, they take advantage of it. So then the tendency is just to avoid. Just to avoid. So until there is some proper Krishna consciousness, you know, then we probably won't see the cultural maturity that, you know, makes for a pleasant cultural, you know, how you say, experience. This is based on Krishna consciousness. We don't have the samskaras to just walk into the Vedic culture and just do it. We can only do it because of purity. Like that. Because we're pure, then we can follow it. It doesn't come natural to us. Like that. If it did come natural, then we could probably present all this in a much nicer way. Is that okay? Because the main thing is that I can be saying it, but it has to come from inside. The women have to train the women. Right? You'll be something trained by the men, but technically you should be trained by women. They should, like, you know how to put on a sari. A man showed you? Or a woman showed you? Right? So all the different things of that should technically be shown by other women. You know, or men that we're working under. But since that's not in place, then therefore that's why. You know? Means we can speak to support it, but to actually do it, it has to come from within the community itself. Yeah, but the two wrongs don't make a right. And as soon as they go like that, then you create chivalry. And chivalry then, do they want to fight with a man? No, because when it push comes to shove, it's step outside. We'll punch you right in the nose. That's what it comes down to. You know? And the thing is then they're going into, a man can work in that field. Right? But when women get into that field, they lose all their good qualities. That's why chivalry between men and women is between the bed sheets. The battlefield of love. Otherwise, men and women aren't equal. That one of them is senior to the other. There's no equality other than conjugal relationship. That's all. Outside of that, the woman is superior as mother, or she's junior as daughter. Or even the wife respects the husband. So you keep it like that. Because as soon as you create equality, then immediately then there's all this fighting. It is topsy-turvy. But the point is how are the men weak? They became weak from really strong, good, well-trained mothers. The men are the way they are because they've been made that way by the women. The men were already weak when women's lib hit in the 60s. Why? Because the men were already useless. So that means the women of the 40s created the men of the 60s. So if you really want to get in, it's because of that. But why are the women lack? Because the men also don't train. The whole point is it goes, they both have to accept the responsibility. The men behave as men, women as women, and they can do. But even if not, the women behave as women, they can create the children and train the children. Then you have a new generation. The Kshatriyas were all killed. There wasn't one left. All that was left was Kshatriya women. Right? So because it's not in the Kali Yuga, they approached highly qualified Brahmins, begat children, and then they raised the next generation of Kshatriyas. Those men didn't come in to live in the palace. The women raised them. They created the men. And then those men were sent to those Brahmins' ashrams to be trained. And then they came back, and then they ran the kingdom. But they had a good mother. That's why you see Kasyapa, and he checked. They all check.
the women first. They get married. It doesn't mean that that they're going to be getting any children in them. Which? Yes. So that's the whole point. That how many women will allow that? If a woman wants to send her kid to the Gurukul, other women will say she's crazy. So who's destroying the culture? Who's making the men useless? Right? You have the boys in the school, you're trying to make them into something that then they can properly respect and take care of women. You know? A useful person in society. And their mother won't leave them alone because they feel if they don't come, the kid will die. You just can't run. Can't function. Rare. Rare. That's why out of 30 applications for students, we took 3. One is the kid, but 2 is the parents. Like that. Right? We just had a kid come. Mother wouldn't leave him alone. Wouldn't go away. Saying, and she blames, I'm detached, but the kid wants me around. What can I do? Right, just go away. She can't do that. She'll blame it on us, blame it on the kid, blame it on everybody else. She's not at fault, not one bit. You know, how is it the kid didn't know what was going on, that he was going to be without his mother? Why his mother didn't tell him? Why is he can't wash his clothes? He can't even wash his bowl. He can't even finish eating what's in his bowl. Because his mother can't train him. Like that. But you see, so many kids come, they can do so many things by 5, 6 years old, 7, 8 years old. Very qualified, respectful, can do things like this and that. Because you see, because their mothers are good, their mothers are trained, so they have good children. The son's qualities are the mother. So if the boy, men are useless nowadays because their mother was useless, that's why. Otherwise, why are they useless? The son takes the nature of the mother. They have the spirit of the father. But then she married the guy. If the guy was a bozo, why did she marry him? You know? The spirit, the mood of the father. It would be the nature of the mother and the mood of the father. But I think girls, it's the opposite. Nature will be the nature would be the basically the ashram and occupational, the natural occupational duties of the person. The mood would be kind of like the means their approach to doing the activity. Right? It's just like, let's say, a Brahmin. It is duty, it's intellectual, you know, it has to be done on scriptures, but the intellectual aspect, or the ritual, or the spiritual aspect of it, that is the mood or the spirit. They may be a pujari, they may be a teacher, they may be a yogic Brahmin, they may be so many different things. The kshatriya is then is protection, you know, like this and that, martial spirit, resourcefulness, these kind of qualities, like that. The vaishya is profit, right? There must be profit, prosperity, these kind of. Shudra, it's the expression of their heart, their expression, the expression of their mind and their senses, right? So then, let's say you have a Brahmin father and a Kshatriya mother, the boy by nature would have be a Kshatriya that has a Brahminical mood. So they would tend more towards the scriptures, more towards the things, but they're Kshatriya. That's the general tendency. They may be a Brahmin, or they may just be straight without. You know? But the general tendency is that. That's why when you reverse it, it's worse. The mother's higher than the father, then you get a son that, let's say, the father's a Kshatriya, the mother's a Brahmin.
So then he'll have a brahminical nature, but he'll have an approach to it with a kshatriya mood. There'll be that challenging, chivalrous spirit. So then how do you have a nice, pleasant... Therefore you have Vishwamitra, right? He's a kshatriya who's a Brahmin. Therefore so much fighting, this, that, show me everyone who's better, superior, this, that, this, that. It's a disturbance. It's just a disturbance. Right? Does that make sense? Kind of. Subtle. I mean, it's just one of those things, you work with it, then you start to catch it. You know, it's a new concept, so therefore. In other words, he'll have let us put it this way, he'll have the occupational, he'll take up the occupational duties of the mother in the mood of the father. You know, does that make some sense? His process for economic development, his position in society, he'll take from the mother. And the mood in which he'll do it is taken from the father. It's guna and karma. It's guna and karma. So it doesn't matter. They can be born in any family. You see the guna and karma. These are just the natural tendencies. But they may manifest something different. In like Vena, born in the very righteous kshatriya family. But he was a demon. Right? His mood was demoniac. Right? But he performed the kshatriya occupational duties. You know? Duryodhana also performs the kshatriya occupational duties, the little demoniac in his approach. Karna also. You know? Like that. So it's guna and karma. So that's why, that's what's seen. We don't put on the other thing. But therefore the Vedic is, get as close as possible to the natural natures of the parents. Then the child will just have a natural set nature that they can then engage in Krishna consciousness. But even if it's all mixed up, doesn't mean they can't be Krishna conscious. You can be Krishna conscious despite whatever is going on. Whether the management's good or not, or you know, everything's this way, or the community works or not. Despite all of that, you can be Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead. That's the beauty of it. To create the nice social systems and all that are to encourage the people within it, make it easier for them, and those without it can see and be attracted by it. But otherwise, itself, Varnashram is not what gets us back to Godhead. It's a tool. Like that. Sorry if we're a little rough, but somehow or another we react like that to issues. We have to, maybe when we get a little older, we'll mellow out and we'll be able to explain it more pleasantly. That's the thing. It means your point is that they're reacting because they felt that they haven't been dealt with properly, which generally they haven't been. But that doesn't mean that this other is a solution. The solution is men should deal with women properly, right? At the same time, women should behave properly. Like that. You have to do both at once. Otherwise, if the man behaves with the women properly, then many times you can correct it. Or if the women behave with the men properly, you can correct it. But it's not as good as if they both behave properly. Like that. That's the easiest. Otherwise, then you have to, you know, cultivate. But these are political solutions. They're not real solutions. It means women want to give class, there's nothing stopping them. I'm giving class. I haven't given one class in the temple for months. Right? And then every night we're giving classes here. So if a woman has something to say and like that and people want to hear it, she can hold a class, anyone will come. Why it has to be the temple Bhagavatam class? Because that makes some recognition or this or that. And even if you do it, they sit there, then generally the women would sit in the front and the men would sit in the back. So that's also fine. But when you have the woman sitting there and then right in front of her is sitting all the brahmacharis and sannyasis and all that, it's not a comfortable situation. I generally sing, they do it. They talk real fast, they sing real fast. They look nervous as anything. You know? Because it's not, but if you put the women in the front and the men in the back, then it would be much more natural. You know? But these aren't solutions. They're the tradition, but they're not solutions. Because the solution, the point is not that the woman gives a class, there's other motives behind it. You know, it's just to show them we can do whatever they do. Oh, great point. Okay. Then we can get down to reality of, you know, going back to Godhead. That's a different discussion. Like the difference between grandparents and parents. The parent tells the kid, do this, don't do this. And the kid may or may not do it, you know, depending on the nature of the child. But the grandparents always explain it. Grandparents is never a yes and no. There's always a whole story behind it. Like that. Therefore, the kids imbibe so much from the... Consciously, they imbibe more from the grandparents, though unconsciously... They have the nature of the parents. You know, even if they reject it and walk out on them and go out and we don't like you guys, they'll do exactly the same things their parents. Our own devotees now, right? You know, they rejected, walked out on middle class establishment America. And what are they living now? You go over there, what are those houses? Middle class establishment Western culture. You know, you have a neighbor, you don't even know who they are. You know, you walk to this and that. It's no different. The diet's the same. They're eating the same Kellogg's cornflakes. You know, it's the same, you know. Though they rejected it because subconsciously they got all that from the parents. Like that. But consciously, generally the grandparents are more successful. Just because they use that technique. If the parents use that same technique, it works. It's the technique. It's not just because the grandparents. I mean, of course, the grandparents, there is a mood of detachment there, because they're not their kid. So if things get too crazy, then they can always leave and leave the kid there with their parents to look at. So because of that slight detachment and the willingness to explain, therefore, they get the points across. That's why the Gurukul is run by Brahmins who the kids aren't their kids. So they have a detachment because of the brahminical nature, and they give the knowledge. Therefore, they can change the culture of the child. So this whole thing, you have to have the family bring it in, bring the women in, do all these different things. It doesn't work. The kids don't. Kids, you know, the kids, they just, you know, become either useless or spoiled. Like that. So it's a science. Yes, but the husband runs it. The wife assists the husband. That's all. The role of the wife is assisting the husband. So she would clean the place, she would take care, she would help. If the age difference between her and the students not too close, then she would also help take care of the kids. The small, but if she was a young girl, you know, she's gotten married, she's 12, 14, 16, and the boys in the ashram are also teenagers, and she doesn't take care of them at all, nothing. They don't even come and touch her feet. Like that. She's older and all that, then they'll come and touch her feet. Like that. And in the absence of the guru, then she'll see as whatever things he would always want to be done, that they're doing it. That's all. She would remind them of that. But it's established by him. She doesn't run it. Now the modern thing is the woman runs and then he runs, or he takes this group of boys, she takes that group of boys, so they're on. But it's not. It's a totally different thing. Because if the husband's running it, then he's the influence and the wife is backing up. So then the boys can become men. But if she's running it, the boys can't become men. Women can't make boys into men. Like that, they can't. It just doesn't work. Like that. At least not by modern techniques. Some old world techniques they can do, but then generally it has to be your own mama. You know? It means that they just harass them so much that you're so useless, or sitting around here, we got nothing in the house, and you're just sitting here. You know, you don't care. You know, we've given you all this, and you're, you know, useless. In other words, you invoke their pride, their masculine pride. But that takes a really heavy mother to do it. You know, really heavy mother to do it, to make them men. But the tendency is then it's too much. Their pride's too much. You know, we see South Americans, the Latins are very good at this. Latin mamas are really good at invoking this kind of manliness out of the men. But it has its downside because they're so proud, therefore then they're always fighting with each other and can't get anywhere. They can't cooperate. You know, so each has its weakness. So the best thing is boys are made into men by men. Like that. And then if the person is a grihastha and his wife is there, she assists. And then it makes it very nice, and it's a nice, pleasant atmosphere and all that. Then the man can concentrate on studying and all that, kids and that, and the wife will cope and do these different things like that. So then it nicely gets taken care of. It's a nice situation. But it doesn't mean that it can't be taken care of by just men. That's also a fallacy. You know, if only women can, you know, raise the kids, is then why is it they walk out on the women after 11, 12? You know, they get into their friends, and the friends are boys, or the friends are girls. But, you know, it's totally uncool to be around your mommy, you know, when you're a teenager. So it doesn't work past that. That's why you see basically most all our schools in the world, they don't have past 12-year-olds. Like that. Maybe it goes a little bit past 14, but then you see the boys are very, very weak. And that's strong. Because only men can get them beyond that. It's just science. You know, just like the strength in women is created from women. Strong women can create strong women. Like that. You know, the woman in the family who's like the backbone of the family, then she can create, instill that in the girls. She doesn't have that, she can't. The men don't. Men encourage it. But they're not the ones that do it. In other words, the women deal with the boys on the sentimental platform. But the actual straightening it out comes not on the sentimental platform. Same as the men encourage the girls through the sentimental aspect. And from that so much happens, but at the same time it's real nitty-gritty. It's done by the women off the sentimental platform. So it's just the science. You need both sides, but they have their place. Okay, so I think both storms are over now. So, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanta Govinda.